Thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Art of the Score. Tonight's guest is Fernando Velasquez. Mr. Velasquez garnered the attention of film fans everywhere with his haunting score for The Orphanage, and this past year has been his most stellar yet, with the sweeping and beautiful melodies he composed for the tsunami disaster film The Impossible, and his mesmerizing work for the recent horror film Mama, starring Jessica Chastain. Was film music always a part of your appreciation of music?
Yes, actually, yeah, it was. It has always been, but I never felt any difference between film music and symphonic music and songwriting. Of course, it works in a different way, but it's always music, it's always communication, and it's always like telling stories. So I've always loved it, and I've always feel it the same way and the same passion about music and films and music itself, films themselves, even books and stories and storytelling. Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about.
It really is, and which is interesting because, I mean, not only do you have to be a terrific musician to compose films, but you also have to know how to read a film. I mean, to know what a film needs. Did you always have that kind of feeling for storytelling in terms of film?
Oh, definitely. I think it's more, I mean, some of the most brilliant film composers nowadays, I don't know if they're very good music composers. I mean, of course they are, but they are even better in storytelling and creating meanings with music because they are actually filmmakers. And I think nowadays, a composer working in films is a filmmaker also. It's like the DP or the scriptwriter or even the cast in the movie. I mean, it's we are all filmmakers, and we have to use this understanding of storytelling and filmmaking.
Well, you've done some terrific scores, and I guess the process is so kind of mysterious to me. I wanted to
it is to me. Don't worry.
I guess it is. I mean, if you find that you have to think too much about what music to make for a film, do you find that the music suffers? Does it feel like it needs to come from a very organic place, almost like an instinct?
Well, sometimes it happens and after lots of work, and sometimes it happens the first time. You never know. That's brilliant and beautiful in a way. And it's because finally movies are like people. I mean, they are human creating, so each one has got its own personality, its own, it's like chemistry. So if you feel good with a movie, it will happen in the end. It will work and it will happen. And sometimes it happens from the beginning. The most easy things are the more difficult. So then, for instance, the melody we have in The Impossible, or in The Orphanage, both similar scores in a way. Both are a version, I don't know how much, or how many, like we did like 15 versions of a theme, I mean 15 different themes, changing little notes here and there, changing little harmonies here and there until we found the perfect blend of chords, notes, melodies, and counterpoint, and everything. And sometimes the theme is there from the beginning, you never know. Mm-hmm. But no, it's just beautiful work, and work.
Well, and your score for The Impossible is just absolutely gorgeous, and it elevates the film. And, you know, when I think about how you would go about producing those first ideas for the music for a film, I mean, I listen to The Impossible, and I hear it feels like a kind of reaching out for hope. I mean, and there's even an escalation in the music. The da 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 da. Was that something that your thought process when you came up with that?
Oh yeah, completely. I mean, I'm very happy that you feel the music, but sometimes it's very the process is very intellectual. I mean, I really know what I'm doing, and I'm trying to mean something with some meaning. I want to create this meaning using, you know, what harmony can help me with,
mm-hmm.
or melody. So, for instance, this bridge in the because this bridge in the melody of the impossible was in our ideas was longing for something.
Mm.
It's like looking for something. So we have a first part of the thing that is the family. And then we have this longing for looking for, and then we have a hug. We have a re-encounter, a reunion in the end. So we think it in a very intellectual way. And sometimes, for instance, as it happens with Juan Antonio, the director of the impossible, he's got very clear ideas of what we need or what we can start with. And then we develop them. I like it because it's both very, very, very analytic, very intellectual, and very, you know, philosophical in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's completely mixed with being completely irrational about what we are doing. So it's both feeling, you know, it's being in both worlds of, let's say, analysis and, you know, like, know what core means what,
right.
And know which melody will mean something for the movie. And on the other hand, then the music is alive, the movie is alive, and you don't know what is happening when you play the music against it.
and I understand completely what you're saying, that it's a great mix of the intellectual and the purely emotional. And as a listener, I mean, to your Impossible score, I mean, I'm swept away by the emotion of it. And I'm curious, when it comes to tone, did you constantly kind of have to balance, you know, how heavily should we hit the emotion of a scene, and how much should we pull back on it?
Yeah, I mean, this was what it was all about measuring and, you know, putting enough but not putting too much. And this was I wouldn't say our nightmare, but it was our biggest concern, was not to go too far, because we wanted to pay, you know, to fully, absolutely respect all the people that suffer in this tragedy or in any tragedy at all, because, you know, it's about tragedy. It's not only about this particular tsunami, it's about any tragedy. So we were always measuring the energy that the melody would have, or the energy that we had to calculate how many players we had, and even the dynamics, you know, when you write in the score, you can write forte, or you can write piano, which means softer, or you can write mezzo piano, mezzo forte. We were so concerned about it. So it was like 50% of the job was measuring and, you know, putting enough and not stepping back too much. I think I would say it worked like baking powder and flour. You know what I mean? You have to put baking powder so it grows, but if you put too much, it's not working, and if you put too little, it doesn't grow.
Well, and it's also, I would think when you're, excuse me, when you're spotting the movie, and determining where music cue should come in, it's just as important to determine where you shouldn't use music. And what struck me, about watching the movie was that when the tsunami hits during those scenes, when it first hits. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they're largely music-free.
Oh, yeah, completely, because the sound is it's working by itself, and the music wouldn't mean anything. I mean, the audience is completely overwhelmed by the experience, so it would be meaningless and would be wasting the power of music. And it happens a lot along the movie, that there are so many touching emotional moments without music. You know, we could have put much more music than we didn't. But it was a difficult calculation also, where to put, where not to put. And to be honest, I can tell you, we did come out of cues that we dropped in the final movie, because we were not sure about the final results of the whole experience of the movie. And you know, when you're working in a movie, it's very, very difficult to keep the perspective about it. It's very, very difficult because you are, you know, the scene by heart. You know what is coming. So it's very difficult to get the surprise and to have an accurate perspective of it. So with this excuse, for instance, there's a nightmare. I mean, it's not a nightmare, but there is this kind of, when she gets operated and she has a dream that means something or not, and you know she's like going up and the rest of the dying people are going down. We also recorded like four different versions for this nightmare, and finally it was only sound design, because it's so difficult to know what is going to happen with the movie until it's very, very much finished. Even the color that you get in the final, you know, the final color of the movie, because they play a lot with the color.
Mm-hmm.
Even the final color of the picture would change the experience. So you have to be very open to drop some cue, sometimes to use a cue that you wouldn't expect somewhere else, And you know, it's a beautiful work in progress until the very last minute.
Well, another part of the process that fascinates me, and I find the same thing with editors, is that you're so involved in it, and you've worked up so many multiple versions of the same cues, and are there moments when you feel like, you know, I frankly don't know anymore if it works or not, and you have to bring in people from the outside to kind of watch it with fresh eyes and tell you if it's playing well?
Of course, and I think it's clever to do it. And actually, all successful filmmakers and know did the same. I mean, with music, with editing, with script, and with any part of the project, it's great to have good friends that, you know, in a moment can have a fresh new view and a fresh new perspective and tell you how they like it. Of course, I mean, you shouldn't rely only on what people tell you, mm-hmm. but it's very important to, because, you know, we work in a rush, so we don't have time to get distance and then watch it again. It's very difficult. Now, for instance, when I watch any movie that I did like 5 years ago, now it surprises me again, but it's, you know, you need a very long time until it surprises you. So it's very good to have a wonderful crew and wonderful team of people working together. So sometimes I get input from a producer or from an editor or even, you know, some friend or family I spent a theme. Mm-hmm. You know, they tell me, oh, this theme reminds me of, I mean, it makes me feel free for that. So it's very useful. And honestly, when it's about filmmaking, I think it's a good idea to count them on a big team.
Yeah, yeah.
And to work with them.
In terms of the amount of time that you're able to spend working on a film, I mean, if it were a perfect world, would you want to come in before production, or are you not able to do your job until you actually see those first frames?
Oh, for me, I mean, reading scripts is boring because I don't know what they will do with them. I don't have imagination. I mean, of course, I do have imagination, but then I imagine my own things. And for instance, what I read from The Impossible, I read the script, and it had absolutely nothing to do with what I saw. And not because the script is not very accurate, because it is, but I would imagine something much more different, and then the director took it to his place and did it in a completely different way. So I prefer to watch movies. It's much easier for me to think about, because music itself is time and movement. So it's very difficult to imagine time and movement than just reading.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Of course you do, but you do it in a different dimension. So when I see a movie, and when I see pictures in movement, then I just happen to hear music in my head. I don't know why.
Yeah. Well, another aspect of your music, I mean, we've heard it in The Orphanage and Devil, which, I mean, Devil is a score that I love too. I listen to that one a lot. And, of course, your new score for Mama, which is just gorgeous as well. When you're working in that kind of genre, does it allow you a freedom to be bold in your choices?
Well, just in a way, because I want the movie to work the best way possible. I don't want to strange combination of being yourself and dressing yourself and to do your stuff, but knowing that you are serving story and you're serving a producer, director, you know, a lot of people that want to do a movie in a way. So sometimes, you know, even for Mama and you mentioned Devil, I tried even older things and really wild things in the beginning that we dropped because they were too much.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in Devil, I would try some even more sophisticated, let's say, Eastern-oriented music with some low voices. And, you know, it was very, it would sound like unseen. It would sound like crazy stories or something. You wouldn't identify it with music itself. And I tried it, and we really liked it. We knew that it would be too much, you know, it would become the movie a little too far away from the audience. And I think it's good never to forget that there's an audience. So, but you know, the great thing about music is that you can try very awful things if you want with the music. And sometimes you produce them. For instance, now I'm doing, I'm scoring a, let's say, apocalyptic film. It's a wonderful Spanish movie. And I'm using very different instruments that I wouldn't dare to use in any other movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm using, or for instance, in Devil, now that, I mean, you know, the core in Devil, I used rhythm, strange rhythm, from where I come from. It's a region from Europe where we speak a different language from anything else, the past country. And I used a very strange rhythm we have there that, you know, in a different movie would have been too much, but then when I listen to it, it's really good.
Mm.
And it's just kind of different, isn't it? I mean, it's not like using the classical contemporary approach to general story.
Right. I wanted to ask you before I let you go, because this is the question that we ask all the film composers at the end of their interviews. If you were to choose three scores outside of your own that you think are essential, which ones would they be?
Wow, that's a difficult one. But first one, I think, would be Gone with the Wind.
Mm.
The second one would be The Mission by Ennio Morricone. And then the third one, it's so difficult. It's so difficult. you know, nearly any John Williams to do.
Yeah.
And of course, it's awful because we are neglecting all this amazing, wonderful tradition we have. And, you know, it's a very, very rich panorama of composers nowadays. Like you know, all colleagues I have doing completely wonderful scores. And you know, I don't want to quote anybody because then I will be missing others, but not to mention Gary Goldsmith, or, you know, it's a wonderful tradition, and that's why I love to study and to know not only stuff that is being written nowadays, but, you know, the past, and even the past before the past, if you go to Gary Goldsmith, and then you go to Steiner, and then you go to Korngold, and then you go to Mahler, and then you go to Wagner, and then you go, you know, you can trace this tradition down to the Baroque or even the Middle Ages. And I love this because we are very lucky that we have this Western culture, and we have this archive of wonderful ideas that work so well with film, actually.
Well, everyone I ask that question of, it's painful for them to answer too.
So. I hope I said something clever and I didn't say any dumb things because, you know, I didn't mention, you know, Schindler's List or Cinema Paradiso or, you know.
I completely understand. I mean, if someone were to ask me that question, it would take me forever to limit it down to three because there's Herman and like you said, Goldsmith, and Goldsmith did hundreds of really different scores. Which one do you choose? You know, it's an impossible question, but I appreciate you gave me great answers, so thank you.
Okay, I'm glad to hear.